Bankless Nation, is the second week of June. It's time for the Bankless Weekly Roll-Up. We got Stripe buying another crypto company. We also have, David, I know you're going to love hearing this, Stablecoin Summer is in full swing.
Do you know how many times I've seen Stablecoin Summer on my feed this last week? It was a solid like four times from people all across crypto Twitter.
What can I say? You heard it here first, all right? This is where the narratives are born. We got the Genius Act votes. We've got Circle pumping. We've got every bank in America, it seems like, talking about issuing a stablecoin. And there's a whole bunch of other tokens I think people should pack on Stablecoin Summer. I've got some takes on what that might be. David, I want to hear yours as well.
And outside of the world of stablecoins, Polymarket and X have an official partnership, which is probably, I think, one of the most mainstreaming things I've ever heard come out of crypto. So the Polymarket prediction market directly integrated into Twitter. And then we also got the SEC chair, Paul Atkins, saying DeFi is as American as apple pie, which, wow.
That's an exact quote.
My ears. That's incredible.
It's also the year of the IPO, David, 2025. I think that's what's going to be remembered by. So who is next on the IPO list? And finally, we got Trump making an unexpected appearance at the Coinbase conference. He has a few words. We're going to share that at the end.
Ryan, did you, so the Limitless podcast where we now do the AI roll-ups. If anyone's curious as to where the AI roll-ups on Bankless went, it went on to the Limitless podcast. Did you catch that one this morning?
Oh, yeah. I catch it it's the first thing I do on Thursday mornings. Second thing I do, but that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. I listen to it on Spotify so people can get it there. They can also get it on YouTube.
Okay. What's the common consensus take about Apple's WWDC that you hear on Twitter? What is
everyone,
it?
Everyone is sad about it. Everyone thinks Apple missed the boat on AI completely and they flubbed it. They flubbed the ball.
Okay. So one of our hosts, Josh, is a huge Apple fanboy, has been for years, continues to be. He has a completely contrarian take.
I know.
You listen to the episode, so I'm already telling you.
Yeah.
He actually thinks that Apple is doing the like high IQ 40 chess thing.
I enjoyed it. I think the show is fantastic. The AI roll up is just like a great way for me to get downloaded on AI stuff. And I also heard in that episode, David, you now subscribe to the $200 a month ChatGPT plan.
I pay $200 a month for ChatGPT.
That's a lot. You're aware that's $2,400 a year, right? You just do the math. Those numbers?
I just aped into it because he just told me to.
And it's O3 Pro, and it's good, right?
It takes a long time to think. It takes like multiple minutes to generate an output, but the output is, I mean, it would have taken me multiple minutes to think that.
So as you guys were talking about this, I was like, I am not smart enough to actually generate a prompt for a PhD level.
The constraint is the quality of the human's input, the output.
That's kind of a problem. If that's a PhD researcher, I don't know how to prompt a PhD level researcher. And so like what? I posted this on Twitter and people were like, yeah, what you have to do is you have to ask it how to prompt it. And at that point, why am I even here?
Yeah, these are the existential questions that we kind of ask a lot on the AI roll-up. Anyways, go subscribe to the AI roll-up if you just want. It's Bankless for AI. We cover the weekly news in AI. It's a ton of fun. Ejaz and Josh are great hosts. And then we are also looking for a growth manager for Bankless because the AI roll-up is doing very well and we need to just hit the gas on that. And so if you are good at growth, podcast growth, Twitter virality, YouTube virality, we're looking for a growth manager. That's both for Limitless and Bankless. So there is
a
link.
A human
growth manager, growth marketer to just help press on the gas on this podcast. There's a couple other jobs as well. There's links in the show notes to go check them out as well.
Ryan, tell me about Bitcoin price. Yeah. What's the Bitcoin price?
Up 2.8% on the week, $107,600. Pretty good. Pretty good. This last week, the Bitcoin ETF became the fastest ETF ever to break $70 billion. That's BlackRock's Bitcoin ETF.
Look at this chart, man.
That's pretty nuts.
This is for those that can't see, this is iBit, the BlackRock Bitcoin ETF. And it's charted over time since, you know, it was first, released. And it's comparing to the gold ETF and some of the other big ETFs. And it just hits the what was the key number?
70 billion. Yeah,
it hits it so much sooner than all of these
like
other
four
ETFs.
Times sooner. Granted, this doesn't account for inflation, so there's like, you know, 2 to 3 times more dollars out there than there were when those ETFs, but still, it's exciting.
Very exciting. Tell me about ETH price in the week.
ETH price up 5.6%. So we're back to another Ryan Sean Adams week where things are up and ETH is up more than Bitcoin. Call that an RSA week.
Yep.
$2,738 is where ETH is at this week. But also, I think the ETH ETF story is telling a very interesting story. What is that story?
David, that story is about green, positive numbers, flows into the Ethereum ETF. This is the Ethereum ETF from July 2024. That's when it was released. The July 23rd, 2024, all the way down. See, look at this table. Look, there's a lot of red on this table. And I'm going to keep scrolling down. We see lots of red, 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 red as we're finishing
the
year.
Because of the outflows of the Grayscale ETH trust.
Exactly. Right. When it's outflows. When it's black, it's inflows. And so let's look at this. Let's look at this like the last, you know, 2-3 weeks or so. It's all black. It's all inflows. And
Black is good. Black is green.
Black is green. Yeah. So black is green. Black is good. We're confusing folks here. The bottom line is we've got a total of $3.7 billion in net inflows into the Ethereum ETF with some really strong performance over the last couple of weeks, which
18 days in a row of inflows.
Yeah. It feels pretty good. I mean, it's like, maybe the institutions are kind of changing their mind on Ether, the asset. Maybe they're starting to get bullish. What are they seeing that the rest of crypto Twitter isn't? That's what some of the ETH bulls are asking, and I'm among them. There's another metric. Do you remember Jim Bianco?
Bianco, yeah.
Used to talk about this, which is like the amount of stable coins and how that is correlated to both DeFi token valuations and also valuation of Ether, the asset. Look at this chart here. How would you describe this chart?
We are looking at two charts. We are looking at the ETH price overlaid stablecoin supply on Ethereum. I'm guessing that's on Ethereum. And stablecoin supply, I mean, it dipped a little bit throughout 2023, 2024, not that much. And it's at all-time highs now. We're coming in at $130 billion. And then ETH price is overlaid on top of that. And I mean, ETH price, everyone knows what ETH price has done over the last 4-5 years. I do not consider these things to be correlated. Those don't look correlated to me.
It's I mean, you see kind of a bump in the chart, right? And then ETH price follows. It's kind of maybe a lagging type thing. Maybe
in
you can
2021
start to, see
to 2022, there was very strong correlation. But that's because everything was up in 2021 to 2022.
Maybe. Or maybe stablecoins are just net good
if
for
ETH. If we want
ETH
to be correlated to stablecoins, it needs to go up. It needs to go up right now.
Yeah. Well, we're up 5% on the week. I'm staying humble. I'm staying humble this week. I'm not making that mistake I did the week before last when I got all cocky.
I glow you up.
And I call
you don't
numbers.
Blow yourself up.
Nope. I'm just staying humble, okay? Yeah. So we'll see what happens, David. We just don't know. Should we do a quick macro drive-by and what's going on in the quote-unquote real world?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the inflation numbers. So inflation rose, but less than expected, David. So that surprised some analysts. The forecast was about a rise of 0.3% for CPI and 2.9% for core CPI. And it came out not 2.9%, but 2.8%.
Okay.
So that means the annual inflation rate is 2.4%. So it's burning less hot than some people said it would. And of course, J.D. Vance, the Trump administration, took no time to do a victory lap on this and call on Fed Chair Powell, to reduce rates. Inflation's not hot. You can reduce rates. This is what he said. The president has been saying this for a while, but it's even more clear. The refusal by the Fed to cut rates is monetary malpractice. He said this on the back of the lower than expected
monetary malpractice.
CPI.
I like those words. Yeah. I'm going to use that.
That's pretty good. I bet he plugged that into ChatGPT, David, to get that. So, you know, others are saying, look, the forecast is reassuring. Inflation's not as hot as we thought, but we haven't seen the tariffs affect these numbers yet. And that is still to come.
Sure. Yeah, the politicization of the Fed chair is, I think, going to be a reoccurring theme throughout the rest of this year. I think there's been a crescendo of like Donald Trump wants somebody else to be the Fed chair.
Someone who's a bit more easy money.
A little
than
more
Powell.
Lenient, you know, a little more submissive. If
yeah,
you will.
All presidents want that. But Trump really, really wants
sure, Trump
that.
Really
he's making
wants
it very
it.
Obvious yeah. that he yeah, wants yeah. that.
A while ago, we talked about during the tariff mania, we talked about the polymarket recession indicator, recession odds market. And it got up to as high as 60% during the depths of the tariff scare. It is clocking right now, Ryan, 26%, which in that's a recession in 2025. There's a 26% chance of recession in 2025. Now, granted, we have like 3 months left in 2025 than we last did when we checked in when it was 60%. So, you know, there's 25% for only the last 6 months of the year.
Yeah.
But still, it's down.
It's down. So No, I mean, Polymark saying probably no recession in 2025. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll see what 2026 looks like. And David, you know, last week we talked about the breakup of Elon Musk and Donald Trump, and there was a lot of that drama last week.
We cut the very beginnings of it, but we ended the roll-up
right after
we ended the roll-up. Elon called that bomb. Yeah,
pedophile.
Yeah, he did call him a pedophile.
Well, the relationship seems to be back on this week, or at least it's not as hot as it was. This is Elon Musk. I regret some of my posts about President Trump last week. They went too far, is what he said.
Well, you know, I wouldn't want to go up against the president of the United States either. He's kind of the most powerful man that exists right now. So I think this is kind of a logical outcome, especially when Tesla shares got rocked and then have since recovered. But that also, I've noticed Donald Trump just being taking the high road on this, right?
Like
twisting the knife. Yeah, he's not twisting the knife.
He didn't fire back.
He didn't fire back. Yeah, he didn't take a victory lap. I think he opened his arms. I think, yeah, they wow. are making up. Kiss and make up.
All right. So I guess the bromance is back on, and maybe that's good for assets. It seemed like assets were down at the end of last week as a result of the Trump and Elon breakup, but I don't know. Maybe it's all fine.
Why,
who knows?
Why my coin stock was down because Trump and Elon broke up? I don't know.
We got a lot more to talk about in this episode, but there is a bold tweet that maybe sums up some of the themes right now as we're heading into the summer. What's this?
Yeah, this is even happened before the very recent Stripe acquisition of Privy. So even more of a plus one to what this tweet is trying to say. This is AM from Ansem. Appetite for crypto exposure has never been higher. Various entities alongside Sailor buying multi-billion dollars of Bitcoin. Circle IPO 25x oversubscribed, 5x on open. Plasma $500 million ICO filled within 2 minutes. That happened again, by the way. We're going to talk about that in a hot second. Another $500 million got opened up, got filled within 30 minutes.
Wow.
Government pushing regulatory clarity. I'm just like, this has been the sentiment going around crypto Twitter this week. People are just saying like appetite for crypto, very strong. Very high right now. Very good.
Why did you include this link, David?
This also came out this morning. Just in case you were curious, is like what's going on in trad media, the New York Post put out an article titled, How to Buy Pepe Coin.
This is not real.
And is it a good investment?
This is not real.
This is real. This is real. This is what the normies are reading. Pepe Coin. It's not even a new meme coin. It's like an older one.
Yeah, this feels very bull market vibes. Maybe alarming levels. Hopefully we're not there yet. Hopefully we got a ways to go. But what's next in the roll up?
All right, coming up next, Ryan's going to talk to us about the Genius Act, because we got some, in addition to the very bullish appetite coming from TradFi, we have very bullish sentiment towards the Genius Act, which is, I think, from I'm going to quote Ryan Sean Adams right before we started recording, is going to pass. So hopefully he's not getting too bold about that one. Then he's also going to talk to us about Stablecoin Summer even more, because he just really loves those words. Circle is live on the NASDAQ. We're going to check in on that. And we're going to talk about the second order effects of Circle trading at 5 times its IPO price and holding that price, by the way. Before we get to all of that and more, we're going to talk to some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, like Uniswap. It's a browser wallet, it's a mobile wallet. It's also just the best place to do DeFi. Let's go hear from Uniswap right now. Uniswap is your gateway to a more efficient DeFi experience. With Uniswap, swapping and bridging across 13 chains is simple, fast, and cost-effective, helping you move value wherever, whenever. Thanks to deep liquidity on the Uniswap protocol, you'll enjoy minimal price impact on every trade. And now Uniswap V4 takes it even further. Swappers benefit from gas savings on multi-hop swaps and ETH trading pairs, while liquidity providers can create new pools at 99% lower costs. The best part, you don't have to do anything extra. Each trade is automatically routed through Uniswap X, V2, V3, and V4, so you get the most efficient swap without even thinking about it. Whether you're swapping, sending, on-ramping, off-ramping, or bridging, Uniswap's web app and wallet gives you the tools to unlock DeFi's full potential on Ethereum, Base, Arbitrum, Unichain, and more. Use Uniswap's web app and wallet for a more efficient way to use DeFi. Imagine if your checking account and DeFi wallet finally spoke the same language. That's Mantle Banking, an all-in-one fiat and crypto account. It lets you save, spend, and invest all from one dashboard. Swipe for coffee, stake ME3 yield, or even use virtual cards for payments through Apple Pay. So it feels Web2 simple, yet stays Web3 sovereign. For allocators, meet Mantle Index 4, the S&P 500 of crypto, a tokenized institutional-grade fund seeded with $400 million from the Mantle Treasury and balanced across Bitcoin, Ether, Sol, and yield-enhanced stables. One asset, broad exposure, pure DeFi composability. The momentum is real. ETH vaults, FBTC bridges, and a $2.4 billion community treasury are all powering the next phase of on-chain finance. Mantle brings real-world access, yield, and utility to digital digital assets. Ready for the next era of on-chain finance that actually belongs in 2025? Explore Mantle at mantle.xyz or follow mantle_official. Mantle, bridging TradFi and DeFi so you don't have to.
The U.S. Senate is on the cusp of passing the Genius Act. This would be the first major crypto legislation coming out of the Senate ever. Goes to the House after that. It'll likely pass there. And it is the first stablecoin bill. This is a senator on the floor showing his support, Senator Thune.
This president's clear that cryptocurrency is here to stay. And it's time that we bring it into the mainstream. Passing the Genius Act is a good first step. The Genius Act would provide a clear regulatory framework for stablecoins. It would ensure Americans can trust who they're doing business with when they purchase stablecoins, allowing the American people to exercise financial freedom with confidence.
He goes on. He talks about the stablecoin.
Financial freedom with confidence.
Yeah. And this line is great. Like, cryptocurrency is here to stay, and it's time we bring it to mainstream. And the Genius Bill is the first step.
The first step. You know, I love the nuances.
Yeah, it's great. So what happened this week was there was another vote. You know, they have votes before the votes before the votes. This is not the final vote. The final vote will probably happen next week. But basically, because this passed in the way it did, 68 votes in favor to 30 against, it means it's pretty much certain that the Genius Act will get past the Senate next week when they hold the final vote. So
I'm expecting that Elizabeth Warren crossed arms meme to be passed around crypto Twitter quite frequently next week.
Yeah, I think so. And she had some things to say. We should just actually, before we get to her, we should recap what's in the Genius Bill, because this is probably going to be the law of the land after it gets through the House. And like it looks likely will get through the House as well. The first is this: there are reserve requirements. So every stablecoin must be matched with 1-to-1 cash reserves in the bank, right? Yep. So these are all
fully collateralized stablecoins.
Another thing: the issuer eligibility. So who can actually issue stablecoins under this act? Any bank that's regulated can do this. Any credit union can do this. And so, you know what we've been noticing? We haven't really covered it in the roll-up, but we've been noticing almost like every bank is like, oh, we're doing a stablecoin. I saw like one from Bank of America this week. Just, we're doing a stablecoin. It's because now they have the legal ability to do it under the Genius Act. So they're just trying to get ahead of that a little bit.
Importantly, tech platforms, tech companies, Apple, Amazon, cannot. They cannot. Specifically barred from issuing stablecoins.
Yes. And that was something that Elizabeth Warren wanted to make sure happened, and she got her way on that one. But crypto and fintech firms can also issue stablecoins. It's not just banks and credit unions. What they do need, though, is a brand new OCC license. Okay, the licensing for stablecoins before this was like really weird. It was state by state. It was really, you know, crappy and confusing. And now all they need is this brand new OCC license. There's also a state route as well, but that only is capped to $10 billion. Now, the thing I was really worried about in any stablecoin legislation, David, was AML KYC. All right. It's like, were they going to do a thing where you couldn't send stablecoins from one wallet to another, non-custodial wallet, without doing some sort of AML KYC check? This is like some of the legislation going on in Europe. So this was kind of a sticking point for the bill. Of course, there were many folks, Elizabeth Warren, who wanted additional increased AML KYC. And where they finally landed on this is basically where we are now, that the issuers of the stablecoin would have full AML KYC rule set as they basically do today. So that means customer identification, right? If you're holding a stablecoin on an exchange, they need to know your ID, who you are. It needs to be, you know, government issued license. They're doing the SARS report under the Bank Secrecy Act. So if there's anything suspicious, they file a SARS report. They're doing sanction screening, all of this. But we have preserved our ability to move assets from one non-custodial wallet to another without any additional AML KYC.
And importantly, from a custodial wallet to a non-custodial wallet, which is unlike Europe, because there are currently KYC restrictions on that right now.
I believe so. I mean, I'm not sure with kind of the latest that's going on, but that at least has been discussed. And that was my nightmare scenario for any stablecoin legislation, that they would try to AML KYC everything on-chain, everything in DeFi. Looks like we basically preserved kind of the rights that we have today, which is fantastic.
It's worth noting that was actually a pretty big fight to fight. And stablecoins is one of those big, like, ask for forgiveness things where it moved because of the technology. the Overton window was moved. So like the correlate before stablecoins came out was like PayPal, right? Well, I had PayPal bucks in my PayPal account. And if I wanted to send it to Ryan, Ryan would need to make a PayPal account and then give him his PayPal, his ID. With stablecoins, that technology enabled me to send Ryan USDC without him signing up for the Circle platform.
Exactly.
And so that was outside of the law. That was a legal gray area that we did not know, even though it makes intuitive sense for all people who got into crypto. It's like, oh yeah, I'll just send you USDC. You don't need to sign up. That's great. That's good UX. But that was outside of like regulatory certainty up until right now, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So there were 30 senators who voted no on this. Most of those were Democrats. As you can guess, Elizabeth Warren was one of them. Also, Chuck Schumer, Amy Klobuchar. Those are some names that you might recognize. They also voted no. Some of the reasons, of course, like Elizabeth Warren wanted far stricter AML KYC. She said, like, North Korea uses this stuff. You know, stablecoins are used for scams. So, like, she wanted to kind of regulate it very tightly, almost regulate it out of existence. But there were other Democrats who said things like this.
Should be issuing crypto while they're in office. Or a vice president. There's no reason any person on this floor should do it, or anybody in the House of Representatives should do it. And now in a partially regulated regime.
So this was Senator Bennett basically saying that, you know, I want an amendment on this bill that says vice presidents, presidents, members of Congress can't issue these stablecoins or other crypto assets. So this is a shot at World Liberty Financial. It's a shot at the Trump coin. You could kind of understand
why members of Congress. I don't have a problem with that.
I mean, that piece of the amendment, I'm like, I agree.
Fine.
With.
That's great.
That
yeah, give them that compromise so that we can get more Democrats to sign.
Well, it was already signed overwhelming majority without that amendment. So it looks like amendment's not going forward. But you can understand the rationale for why it was wanted.
So presidents can issue stablecoins?
Yes, they can. And they are, David. Wow. They actually are.
Wow. Okay. All right. Okay. So the final passage will happen on Monday. Monday is the vote. So I think that is the day to tune into this.
It could bleed into Tuesday.
Okay. All right.
And on Tuesday, we have Senator Bill Hagerty on the podcast, who's going to be giving us an update, hopefully with some good news about the passage of this bill. And then it goes to the House, of course. If all goes well, this whole thing could get done by the third week of July. Could be on Trump's desk. He, of course, would sign it. If it doesn't go so well, it could be August or September if there's some fighting in the House, that kind
of
thing.
Third week of July. That's 6 weeks away.
That's soon. This is soon. How long have we been waiting for this thing, David?
I'm impatient.
Years. It's been years. 6 weeks.
All right.
That's it.
So long as Ryan Sean Adams says it's going to pass.
It's going to pass, and we're going to get it during the summer.
Okay.
Which is because of stablecoin. And that's what
allegedly
happens during
stablecoin
summer. Yep.
Yeah.
There is another bill, actually, I wanted to mention to you, too, that I've been kind of monitoring, but I haven't gone deep on. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this before. That's the Clarity Act. And so this is sort of what's the difference between a commodity and a security when it comes to tokens? It's a House bill. They're trying to provide clarity for this.
This is the market structure bill. You have a stablecoin bill, and this is the market structure bill.
Yes. It used to be called FIT, 21. Now it's called the Clarity Act. It's kind of a revision to it. But it has a moderate chance of passing. It's not going to pass before the stablecoin bill. They're still kind of debating it. It needs to get through committee. But this is the most interesting piece of it, actually. There is a decentralization test right now in the bill.
Hmm.
Okay? And I think that's the most fascinating part.
That's going to be a big deal because there's going to be layer ones that pass or fail this test. And there are also going to be layer ones that are going to need to spend a lot of lobbying effort to make sure that their particular layer one passes that test.
Uh-huh. And this is a core part of the bill. It's not something that will be stripped out, at least the concept of a decentralization test, because it's providing a bright line, right? So if you're on one side of the line, you're a commodity. You're decentralized. If you're on the other side of the line, you're a security. You are not decentralized.
You do not want to be on the other side of that line.
Yeah. So I plugged the text of the bill into ChatGPT, and there's a few things. There's a few criteria for being on the decentralized side of the line and being a... deemed a commodity. The mainnet has to be functional and live. Can't be in beta. Has to be like mostly done. There has to be programmatic operation. So everything is enforced by code. No off-chain discretion. This is interesting. distributed ownership. So insiders can't own more than 20% of the supply.
Huh.
Or it's still security.
I wonder how they define insiders.
Right. And they also have governance limits. So no one coordinated group can unilaterally change consensus or command greater than 20% of the on-chain voting power.
Feel all like right? That's pretty stringent. That's a pretty high bar.
Well, so if you run it through like ChatGPT and, you know, ChatGPT, who knows how it defines this, but it says it's likely if this were the criteria that gets in the finalized bill, it's likely that Bitcoin, ETH, Monero, Litecoins, and these OG things pass. Because, by the way, if your asset was 2020 or before, some different rules kind of apply.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's also some different provisions. What flunks right now, according to ChatGPT, XRP would flunk. BNB would flunk.
Yeah. Okay.
Tron, Aptos, yep. Sui would flunk.
Yep.
Solana would flunk.
Ooh.
Some of
okay,
the DeFi.
So that to me, that is the big line. Is like, is the line before or after Solana?
Okay.
Because I think it's like there's a Bitcoin, Ethereum. Those two things are pretty easy to clump together.
Sure.
Then there's a line there, and then there's a bunch of the other ones that you also mentioned, like Monero, pretty decentralized. Then yep. there's a bunch of those. And then there's like a space for another line before Solana. And then Solana, to its credit, has some amount of decentralization. And then there's a line after Solana, which follows like Sui, Aptos, Say, like, well, it's going to be Monad, like all of those.
Right. And those are the layer ones, right? But there's also DeFi tokens too. How about Uni? How about Aave? How about DYDX?
Oh, interesting.
Under the criteria, they don't pass either.
Okay. Well, so, it makes sense to me that like Uni and Aave are not commodities. That makes sense to me.
Well, if they're not commodities, are they securities?
I don't feel comfortable with that.
Right? You can't file a 10K for something that's all on-chain revenue like Aave or Uniswap.
I do not envy anyone who has to deal with this.
They're getting into
this is so hairy.
They're getting into the specifics of defining decentralization.
Okay, and so I was talking to Austin Campbell a while ago at BlockWorks, the Digital Asset Summit. He thinks that the market structure bill, the Clarity bill, is too ambitious. It's going to get bike shedded. It's going to get argued all to hell. And it's going to get unbundled because it's just too big. That was his take.
So we won't have the Brightline decentralization test at all because it's too messy. It's too hairy. There's too many vested interests.
Maybe
we
do,
decide.
But it will get like unbundled and argued inside of its own bill. And then other parts of the market structure bill, because this isn't the only thing about the bill. There are other parts of this bill. So the bill just gets like kind of unbundled and like passed separately. That's what he thinks.
That's definitely one to watch because this Brightline decentralization test would shake things up in a big way. David, let's check in on Circle.
So
this is the Stablecoin Summit leader asset. Okay, what's the price of Circle in the week?
Yeah, so let's see. Over or under $100, Bankless listener, place your bets while Ryan figures out how to get Alex Honnold out of TradingView. We are coming in at, what is it, $110, which is $25 billion. So Circle is holding the line at a pretty juicy valuation. Still 3 to 4x times its IPO price. And so the longer that it stays here, the more Stablecoin summary it is. I feel like that's the rule.
You know what's funny is I don't think crypto natives are buying Circle.
I
don't think they have the net buyers, right?
There's no way. We talked about this last week. Like, they're $120 million of yearly revenue to justify a $25 billion valuation.
If it's not us, who's buying it? Institutions, right?
TradFi, who is looking for a stablecoin. Well, because you said it, like, every single bank is like trying to do a stablecoin, and then there are investors like, oh, stablecoins are hot. How do I get stablecoin exposure? You can't get stablecoin exposure via Coinbase because it's too muddy. Like, they got an exchange and they got a layer two and they got all these other things. Circle is just stablecoins. And so, like, to me, I see when I see Circle at $25 billion, I see people are aping in. People are not thinking. People are trying to buy a narrative, and Circle is the only way to express that narrative. I see froth when I see
but,
the Circle
okay,
price.
Okay, so, but what's interesting about that is the people that are doing this, the people who are buying into this, like in your words, they're not our people. They're not us.
Right.
You know what I mean? What's exciting about it is it's kind of a new cohort of buyers. It's not people on crypto Twitter. This is the institutions that are FOMOing into this asset, which in and of itself is interesting. This is Mike Ippolito. He says, Circle is a great example of price leading narrative. 2 weeks ago, Circle was on its deathbed. Today, my timeline thinks it's a better buy than Coin. He's speaking about basically the crypto Twitter bubble, of which we are probably in as well.
Yeah, I was talking about this with Brad and John on the roll-ups. Like, is crypto Twitter right in their bearishness about Circle? Because we know the actual like fundamentals, and Wall Street is just like top blasting this thing that's clearly overvalued. Or are we just so disconnected from Wall Street and Wall Street appetite? And it's like, well, right now crypto Twitter's wrong because Circle's 5x current the IPO price or whatever.
We'll see. Crypto natives are going to FOMO into things that like appeal to them and appeal to their narratives, right. And institutions are going to FOMO into things that appeal to their narratives. One of those is Cathie Wood, ARK Invest. So she purchased 4.48 million Circle across her ETFs.
She didn't FOMO in. She bought the IPO. So she is up for like 3-4x because she bought the IPO. She's not top last.
Yeah, on the analyst side, some analysts are cautious. Market cap of $22 billion. Circle is selling at 140x earnings.
140x earnings.
That's less than Tesla. What is Tesla? 180?
Also a big narrative play, but yeah, I guess buying Tesla's worked out.
Yeah. Others say the intelligent investor should just wait. Wait for like 90 to 180 days. Wait for this thing to cool down post-IPO.
I'm not buying this right now.
Yeah, don't buy it during stablecoin summer. Yeah. But that lends the question to like, are there other assets that are doing well on the stablecoin narrative? And I think the answer to that question is yes. And some of them are crypto native assets. So I put out this tweet because I was just, you know, brainstorming. I didn't actually pack my bags for stablecoin summer. You know,
You just talked about packing your bags?
I've previously owned some of these assets and just like they've been long-term holds. Not all of them, but like many of them. But packing my bags for stablecoin summer, what do you buy? What do you buy for stablecoin summer? Aave is doing quite well recently. Kind of like money market for DeFi. Maybe because of the Go stablecoin, maybe people are just looking at the assets in Aave, you know, surpassing, what is it, $50 billion and just being like, okay, we're in the clear. Maker, now called Sky, Athena, doing quite well, Frax, doing quite well. Maybe there's a play for Ether. Maybe that's why some of the institutions are buying that ETH ETF, David.
Maybe that's why ETH is up on the week.
Some people are saying like Tron could be a good buy under these circumstances.
I'm looking at all of these charts one by one as you say them. None of them are, oh, Tron, just kidding. Tron's doing great. But none of them other than Tron are really expressing any sort of like anything about Circle doing well. And Tron has been doing well for a while, so it just continues to do well.
Aave seems to be like just crushing it recently.
Yeah, that's true. But also the Ghost stablecoin is only at $220 million.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think about this? Do you think this is a play for people?
I think this is much more of IPO season than on-chain stablecoin related assets season. Like Athena, Aave, like none of them are responding. Like I just said, none of them are responding to the Circle price. And so I think it's much more of just like, can we go public? And then I would also like to see like Kraken and Gemini go public and see where they get comped to, because I think their appetite for going public is downstream of Circle launching at like a 4x IPO price. But they're going to get comped to Coinbase, not to Circle.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I think we could see some animal spirits in stablecoin summer narrative on-chain assets as well. I mean, explain this one. So this is Plasma doing an ICO on Kobe's Echo platform, right? What is Plasma?
Plasma is a Tether-based payment chain. It is a layer one that is going to be optimized for payments. It's like, you know how like Tron is like 99% stablecoin activity, but Tron fees right now are like $4 to $7 for a transaction, so that's not great. So Plasma is making a layer one that's dedicated for Tether, for Tron, or excuse me, for Tether. And so it's a payments layer one. It's just for payments for Tether.
So it's kind of centralized, but it's super juiced.
Yeah.
It also has some kind of Bitcoin miner settlement to the Bitcoin blockchain.
Oh, wow.
Maybe the way Stax does.
Interesting. They're trying to be some like BitVM extension. That's more of a cherry on top, I would say, for what it is right now. Right now, people are just trying to get like, well, Circle is coming in at $25 billion, but I'd like to get exposure to Tether, which is like so much time, many times bigger than Tether than Circle.
Right.
And so Plasma is kind of like incubated by Tether. They had their first initial checks cut by Tether, and they're not the only ones, there are others as well. But their timing of this sale, and again, this deposit cap wasn't a sale. The deposit cap was people depositing Tether onto the Plasma chain, and then it's like waiting room once Plasma chain goes live. And then when Plasma chain goes live, it'll have $1 billion of people's deposits, their Tether deposits on the Plasma chain. So it'll start with $1 billion of Tether TVL to kind of bootstrap itself. And the people that deposited will have a right to access the ICO. So it's like you are buying a ticket. You're not actually selling anything because you're not buying any ticket, but you're reserving your right to buy into the presale by depositing Tether into the Plasma chain. And the appetite for this has been incredibly high. They first started with like a $250 million cap, got filled in an instant. They raised it again to $500 million. They raised it again to $1 billion just this morning. It just got filled instantly. And so people are looking towards Plasma as like a way, a more crypto native way to get stablecoin summer exposure.
It's fascinating, right? Like just to see that kind of the animal spirits jump into this. And the construction here is very interesting. It's got some pieces of Ethereum too. It's like Plasma Reth under the covers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So obviously we don't know. I mean, is this more narrative play in the short run, or does a Plasma just dedicated layer one for Tether actually make sense? I guess we'll have to see on that. But there are some others. So, I mean, that to me is animal spirits and kind of like crypto native assets around this narrative. We'll see if it picks up in other areas. But this is certainly going to be the year of crypto IPOs, to your point. So you mentioned
this
Gemini
one too.
Well, I mean, I think we're already seeing it, right? Yeah. Like we've seen, I guess Galaxy's
not an IPO. We've seen Gemini file to go public. They filed their S1 or whatever. S1?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so Gemini, just crypto from Gemini, confidentially files for U.S. IPO.
Confidentially.
So they're going next. What do you think that valuation is going to be?
I don't know many people who use Gemini still.
In 2021, Gemini raised at a $7.1 billion valuation.
Yeah, well, in OpenSea raised at a $12 billion valuation.
Over or under on that? And that was before, by the way, Gemini got rocked by the whole Gemini Earn thing with, like, you know.
I don't know the financials, but I'm going under on $7 billion.
Okay, I mean, there's some other names here, which is like Kraken could IPO. They've not filed paperwork, but, you know, that's something that's
they've
in speculation.
They've been wanting to do that for a while. Going public. Yeah.
Phantom Wallet was also mentioned.
Really?
Which would be fascinating, I think.
Really?
Yeah. Could be fascinating. Could be possible.
Seems odd.
I mean, if you're going to IPO, though, 2025 is the year. I mean, after the success of Circle, everybody's...
Other people have named Chainalysis, Anchorage. There's a few other companies. Yeah. But like, there's also, we're going to talk about it in a hot sec, just a very hot mergers and acquisition timeline right now. Not mergers, just acquisitions. Overall, there's just like a lot of money changing hands.
Yeah. So what are we going to talk about next?
Coming up next, Polymarket fully integrated into Twitter, into X. So we're going to talk about what that means. Stripe, the thing that I just mentioned, Stripe buys a crypto company. And then also SEC Chair Paul Atkins, the anti-Gary Gensler. He's ready to support the right of Americans to self-custody in DeFi. Wow, that feels so
very
good.
Very progressive, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to talk about all that and more, but first we're going to talk to some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, like Frax, the stablecoin, in celebration of stablecoin summer. They got their Frax stablecoin. They got some of the best yields in DeFi. Let's go hear from Frax right now. In the wild west of DeFi, stability and innovation are everything, which is why you should check out Frax Finance, the protocol revolutionizing stablecoins, DeFi, and roll-ups. The core of Frax Finance is Frax USD, which is backed by BlackRock's institutional Biddle Fund. Frax designed Frax USD for best-in-class yields across DeFi, T-bills, and carry trade returns all in one. Just head to Frax.com, then stake it to earn some of the best yields in DeFi. Want even more? Bridge your Frax USD over to the Fraxtl Layer 2 for the same yield plus Fraxtl points, and explore Fraxtl's diverse Layer 2 ecosystem with protocols like Curve, Convex, and more, all rewarding early adopters. Frax isn't just a protocol, it's a digital nation, powered by the FXS token and governed by its global community. Acquire FXS through Frax.com or your go-to DEX, stake it, and help shape Frax Nation's future. Ready to join the forefront of DeFi? Visit Frax.com now to start earning with Frax USD and staked Frax USD. And for Bankless listeners, you can use Frax.com/r/Bankless when bridging to Fraxtl for exclusive Fraxtl perks and boosted rewards. Imagine verifying yourself without handing over personal data. No hacked databases, no unnecessary personal exposure for airdrops, and no AI bots ruining community governance. Meet Self, the on-chain identity verification protocol built for privacy and control. Self protocol uses zero-knowledge proofs to confirm your identity safely. Users prove key details like age or citizenship without revealing sensitive personal information. Self never stores your data. It only generates cryptographic cryptographic proofs. Here's how it works in three steps. First, register and verify. Use the Self app to scan your biometric passport's RFID chip. Self verifies authenticity with zero knowledge proofs. Each passport creates one unique identity. Second, you can share proofs privately. Third-party apps request identity proofs, like confirming you're over 18. You can also link proofs securely to public wallets for airdrops or governance participation. And then last, secure verification. Apps validate your proofs instantly on-chain, like on Celo, or off-chain. Audited by ZK Security, the Self app is live on iOS and Play Store. Visit self.xyz and follow Self Protocol on X. Breaking as of this week, this happened on Wednesday, Stripe has announced that they are acquiring Privy. So Stripe, the payments company, is acquiring Privy, the good UX embedded wallets infrastructure company, backend infrastructure company. So Privy just makes it really easy for people who download an app to get a wallet that's native into the app automatically without having to do any seed phrases and all that stuff.
A non-custodial wallet, right?
Non-custodial, yeah, that's right. And so if you ever use FriendTech, that was enabled by Privy. There are a bunch of just applications that you might not even know are enabled by Privy.
Hyperliquid.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The banker bot people on Twitter would like everyone to know that they are enabled by Privy as well. Okay. Banker bot is this thing you can just at on Twitter, and as a Twitter account, you have a wallet.
Really?
By this application called Banker Bot, and it uses Privy. And so you can just go at Banker Bot, and if you don't have a wallet yet, it'll give you one.
I mean, that's impressive. That shows how easy it is to actually like spin up a non-custodial wallet using Privy.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone on Twitter has a Ethereum wallet thanks to Banker Bot. You just add it and say, and you have to add money to it, obviously, but you can just like tell it to buy. It's one of those like AI things. Yeah. So it interprets what you want and it interprets your intent, and you can go buy me this like shitcoin, and it'll take the funds in your wallet and go buy it. It's pretty fun. And anyways, acquired by Stripe. So details undisclosed. So I wish I kind of knew the actual valuation that they bought it for, but I mean, 6 to 7 to 8 million businesses use Stripe.
Everybody uses Stripe.
Everybody uses Stripe. And so I don't know if they are just like using Privy just to integrate their wallet infrastructure straight into Stripe would make sense.
I love it.
Pretty big acquisition.
Apparently Privy has about 75 million accounts. So that's probably 75 million non-custodial wallets that spun up over time. I mean, some of these will have very small dollar amounts, but, 7 to 8 million businesses in Stripe. This is the non-custodial wallet infrastructure API SDK play. Remember, was it earlier this year or was it last year, David? When did they buy Bridge? They bought Bridge this year, right?
This year, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so Bridge was basically a stablecoin play. So Bridge has its own stablecoin, and it enables companies to create stablecoins with reserves in U.S. treasuries, and it handles all the compliance and regulatory stuff. And since they acquired Bridge, they've really expanded it. So Bridge now active in 101 countries through Stripe, and allows people to hold balances in stablecoins like USDC and their own Bridge stablecoin. So you got non-custodial wallets, you got Bridge level stablecoin stuff. It seems like Stripe is like just going all in to stablecoins.
Yeah, it really doesn't take a big imagination to put those two things together.
That's wild. Okay, what's happening with Polymarket, speaking of imagination?
Yeah, so I also want to start to actually see this roll out, please. But they announced X and XAI. So this is a Twitter. XAI actually technically isn't X. It's a separate company, but I think they're trying to fold it all together. Have announced that they are integrating Polymarket straight into Twitter. And so this has been a theme that has been brewing around the media space where, I mean, I think kicked off by Polymarket. I think everyone in crypto was talking about post-election. That they were watching the TV, watching the news, but they were really watching Polymarket report the news way faster. Media companies, of which we would be familiar, are all talking about there's something about prediction markets and markets generally that need to be integrated into news sites. And I think this is downstream of that. So Twitter and Polymarket, X and Polymarket, formally integrated. So you're going to be able to just see Polymarket things on Twitter. And I would imagine, I would hope that there is a way to just easily see some sort of outcome and be like, buy, sell, express some bet on that outcome pretty natively in Twitter. I don't know how that would work, but details will come out, I'm assuming, over the time. And so Pretty crazy.
I mean, maybe with
partnership from Polymarket.
Maybe with like a privy wallet inside of Twitter, it's right?
Within reason, yeah.
Mm-hmm. X already uses Stripe, like under the covers as well. So maybe mm-hmm. that's something that you know they could do. Right now, you can also see Grok in the Polymarket UI. So I think that's happening too. And so in the Polymarket UI, on the Polymarket side of things, if you have a question about a certain, you know, prediction market, so what are the odds of US recession? Tell me more about this prediction market. Then Grok is right there to tell you more too. It really makes sense. Like the AI plus X citizen news plus prediction market team up. It's like pretty good synergies here.
Yeah. Yeah. Shane Copeland, the CEO of Polymarket, tweeted the top two truth seeking apps on the internet are stronger together. It's pretty good synthesis, I would say.
Yeah, like that. David, tell me about Morpho Labs, because according to you, they are doing the whole DeFi token thing right. Tell me what they're doing.
Yeah, so they've always done this pretty well. Maybe I'll start with actually something slightly unrelated, but definitely related. Did you know that all the Morpho founders, when they started Morpho, they all signed a contract with each other to not angel invest and not advise other companies? I don't know how long that contract stands for, but yeah, they're like, yeah, we're not going to get distracted by anything else. No distractions.
No divided loyalties.
No divided loyalties, just Morpho. We're not going to use our position as Morpho execs to gain access to exposure, just Morpho. And so down in spirit of that, they have always been pursuing this idea of just like this single asset to control and own Morpho. I think
full
this is
alignment.
Full alignment. This is in like kind of contrast to the equity token split that we see at Uniswap Labs versus the Uni token. There's just misaligned incentives there. And like, I'm not going to like, people love to harp on Uniswap for this. They were born inside of the Gary Gensler era. That's downstream of that environment. I'm not really blaming them at all. It's unfortunate. It is what it is. There's no malpractice there. Morpho they were created in the Gary Gensler environment, but really at the tail end of it.
But the Uniswap example shows divided incentives, right? Because there's Uniswap Labs with separate kind of equity, separate set of holders, and they're optimizing things for Uniswap Labs, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's the Uniswap token, which is the Uni token, which some people feel like it gets kind of the leftovers. It's not fully aligned, at least, with everything that Labs produces.
Yeah, it doesn't have a big voice. It doesn't have... Uniswap Labs is not advocating for the Uni token. And so the front-end fees, and Uniswap.com is owned by Uniswap Labs, and the Uniswap.com fees goes to Uniswap Labs. And then the token holders are like, but what about us? And so there's no like strong leadership that's like advocating for the Uni token holders specifically. Yeah. And so again, this like a byproduct of the Gary Gensler, you can blame Gary Gensler for that. I totally will.
I'm happy to. Yeah.
Morpho built just later, like a couple of years later after really, it was like started like three years ago. There's only one asset for Morpho. There's just the Morpho token. And they made a blog post around this, which is like really trying to focus on just like the Morpho Labs entity is owned by a structure that is controlled by the token, which is pretty cool. Pretty cool. So no equity alignment issues. And then also they also released Morpho V2. So there's a second version of Morpho coming out on the back of this, which it's not technically correct, but like think about it as like an order book for loans. So you have bids and asks for loan terms, and then they have like kind of a matching engine. Again, these things aren't technically true, but they're directionally true. And so they're just there's like a lot of modules here. So KYC and compliance, so that institutions can come in. Just like a lot more expressive features in Morpho.
I think this is about more than Morpho, right? It's about sort of converting our DeFi tokens from sort of lemons with divided loyalties mm-hmm. into sort of unified, aligned. Like assets that you want to hold to get all of the upside of both the initial product and the protocol and any other product or protocol that the team spins out. The way you get with equities, you sent me that a link to a presentation of a bankless guest mm-hmm. that you mm-hmm. had on the podcast when I was out. Felipe from Thea Capital. Mm-hmm. And his point was he called like a lot of existing DeFi tokens sort of like lemons, right? They're sort of neutered. They don't have the full alignment that mm-hmm. equities have. And so, I mean, he made the point that if like something like Amazon spun out a different token, essentially a different equity asset for every business it created,
right? AWS token.
Imagine that.
Amazon Fresh token.
Yeah.
What would you invest in? How would you get Amazon exposure?
How would you Exactly. Yeah. There would be like an Amazon book token. And then when it expands, you have different equity for every single thing. That's not the way equities work. Mm-hmm. The way they work is kind of compounding gains from the successful product launch of 2, 3, 4, and 5. Anyway, our DeFi tokens don't quite work like that. And he wants them to. So I guess Morphos is a good example of, you know, something Felipe would approve of.
Yeah. And again, a lot of this is downstream of the SEC. And the reasons why we can't have nice things is because of the SEC, which brings us to talking about Paul Atkins and the SEC. What happened with Paul Atkins this week?
He said some pretty bullish things about DeFi. So he said this, DeFi, this was a speech title, DeFi and the American Spirit. Okay. He said this, the American values of economic liberty, private property rights, and innovation are in the DNA of DeFi, or decentralized finance, the movement. The prior administration, we know who he's talking about, discouraged Americans from participating in blockchains by asserting through lawsuits, speeches, regulation, and threatened regulatory action that participants and staking as a service providers may be engaged in securities transactions. And he goes on, basically, he's going to stop all of that. But think of that line, David. The American values of economic liberty, private property, and innovation are in the DNA of DeFi. That sounds like something straight out of Bankless, like circa 2020.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the chair of the SEC saying this.
This is pretty cool. I did wish he would say the privacy word. I don't think he said, I don't think I heard
one
privacy.
One step at a time. Yeah. One step at a time. But think of, okay, this is a complete 180 from Gary Gensler.
Totally.
Around this time last year, do you remember the whole SAB, you know, like 121, where the SEC, led by Gary Gensler, was trying to sneak an obscure accounting rule to stop banks from custodying crypto? This had to go to the Senate. The Senate voted, said this was like, you can't do this. SEC doesn't have the authority. And then Biden vetoed it. That's what we were dealing with 365 days ago.
We were
dealing
like,
with that
crap. Biden's going to pivot. He's going to not veto it. And then he totally vetoed it.
He totally vetoed it.
Little loser. Like,
it is a complete... as a completely different world. And so this speech, by the way, was given at a panelist, a kind of a panel, a round table. So Jill Gunter was there, Peter Van Valkenburg from Coin Center, Eric Voorhees was there, and also Paul Atkins, Hester Peirce, Caroline Crenshaw. So that's, they're talking about it. And I know, David, you've had questions about like, what is the SEC actually doing? So it's nice to hear the speeches, certainly, but what are they doing? So one of the things they're doing are hosting roundtables on tokenization and DeFi. So they're talking about this stuff with crypto industry leaders. So something we asked for, that is something we asked for, that is action. Also, they're rolling out FAQ sheets on crypto. So they're giving more clarity to the extent they can. I know they have talked about, and we've talked about this on the roll-up, they've signaled carve-outs for regulatory ATSs, right? So these are brokers that can spotlist Bitcoin and Ether. So like merging together the ATS kind of regulation in crypto. And I think what we can expect next is some more proposed rulemaking around Hester Peirce's, you know, innovation sandbox idea. So when crypto projects start, they're not automatically securities. I think they'll do more around token classification rules. So we'll get some more clarity that way. And ultimately, I think they'll give their take, independent of the Clarity Act, they'll give their take on which assets are securities and which are like free to trade like commodities. So I think we can expect to see a lot more clarity out of this SEC.
Yeah. Yeah. And which is not to say that like I'm disappointed with the progress from the SEC. That's not true at all. I know that it's a very unwieldy hairball of BS that like Hester Peirce has been delivered from the previous administration. And so it's just, I just want all things to happen like now and like immediately. And I know it just doesn't work that way. Anyone who I've ever talked to who has like interfaced with Hester Peirce is like, they are just doing exactly what we wanted them to finally. But also at the same time, I'm like, okay, let's actually put pen to paper and like do something.
Yeah. Well, Donald Trump is doing something, David. And so is World Liberty Financial
Team. I'm relieved.
So there was news this week that World Liberty Financial was acquiring Trump the meme coin, for its treasury. So, of course, they hold other crypto assets. I think Aave is in their treasury, as well as Ether, and now also Trump. So, any hot takes on this?
Trump's World Liberty Financial DeFi app is acquiring Trump's meme coin.
Yes.
To me, it just reads like he's taking pocket money from one pocket and putting it in a different pocket.
I just don't think this helps us right now.
No.
No, like all of the great
all
things.
All of this stuff is a deal with the devil.
Yeah. It definitely doesn't help us. I guess, I mean, we talked about this. I feel like we talk about this every week. It's a lot better than the previous administration.
It's a lot better than the previous administration. I wish he stopped at NFTs. NFTs were fine. Nothing wrong with the NFTs, but meme coin, World Liberty Financial, their incoming stablecoin, it gets really hard to defend.
Well, I guess we'll have to end it there. It is good to have a bullish crypto
look
bullish
president. Look at that Nick Carter tweet. Look at that Nick Carter tweet right below
what
it.
What do you say? Trump shaking hands with Trump, signed by Trump.
That's great.
Yeah, that's great. I think we'll have to end it there for the week. I mean, bullishness, I think we're in bullish season for sure. Oh, by the way,
we have a moment of Zen, I believe.
We'll include this in the moment of Zen. So President Trump actually unexpectedly, at least I didn't expect it, showed up at a Coinbase conference. So we'll play you a snippet from his speech because he gave a speech. But think of this, the President of the United States attending a Coinbase conference and saying some positive words on crypto. That's where we are in 2025. We'll leave it there. Of course, you know, none of this has been financial advice. Crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in. We are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.
One at the Coinbase State of Crypto Summit. I'm delighted to speak to some of the greatest visionaries and pioneers in the fields of tech and finance who are working to build a future powered by crypto. Many have called me the first crypto president. That's an honor. I really do consider that a very big honor, actually. And starting on day one, we ended the Biden administration's war on crypto. It was an absolute war and very unfair. And we unleashed American innovators to do what you do best, lead the world into new frontiers. We ended Operation Choke Point 2.0. I created the first presidential working group on digital assets. I named a pro-freedom, pro-innovation SEC chair, a great man named Paul Atkins, and we created the U.S. Strategic Bitcoin Reserve and the United States Digital Asset Stockpile. But we are not done yet. My administration is working with Congress to pass the Genius Act, supporting the creation of dollar-backed stablecoins. And we also will be working to create clear and simple market frameworks that will allow America to dominate the future of crypto and Bitcoin. Congratulations to everyone at this exciting time in your industry and in our country's life. I wish you all the best of luck.